And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Are we live? Are we kind of not live? No, but
we're not live, but we're doing it. I do that. I do that. I started not telling people when we start the show.
Okay.
Because people get nervous in here.
Yeah.
And so if I say, okay, we're starting in
3, 2, 1.
Well, they choke. Yeah. Okay. But if I just talk and
here
people,
we off. We're off and running. Right. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I tell you, it's I haven't known you long.
That's to your benefit.
But I've done some little bit of a deep dive. I haven't heard all the shows, but I've heard a few of the shows. And, you know, I'm an advocate for mental health, especially here in the Hudson Valley. And I am also an advocate and a seeker in different modalities. And I really appreciate what the work that you're doing in opening up to offering that.
Oh,
and especially using, in my eyes, we have to go to the adaptation of, we got to get off our left brain thinking. We have to get into our right brain thinking and music and art. And it's actually the fun part of our brain.
Right.
So why not get to it a little bit more frankly? So I appreciate the work that you're doing. And
thank you.
All great stuff, man.
Thank you very much, man. So I don't know you very well. And I was so rude to you on the phone. I hate doing that. So I got to start by apologizing. But if I get to know you on the phone when we sit down in here, I sound so stupid.
Once I heard some of the show, the shows, because I hadn't heard the shows up to that point, and then I was like, oh, wow, what's this guy about? And then when I spoke to Jennifer a little bit, she's like, oh, no, you got to check this stuff out.
Right.
So, and then once I did that, Jennifer Naval, who was on your show just a couple of weeks ago, and that's how our connection actually happened, which is pretty great stuff.
Right.
No apology necessary.
Okay.
You know, didn't take it personally.
Good.
I learned some things in my journey that taking things personally doesn't really do you any good.
That freed me up much. I forget where I read it, but I read that saying, almost nothing is about you.
Right.
And that has freed me up so much.
It's so important for us to really know that,
you
know, especially not knowing my background here, but, you know, I'll be full disclosure here just to say who I am. My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Another deep dive. I am also, I suffer from intimacy anorexia. There's a whole story there. I'll let people Google that a little bit.
What is intimacy anorexia?
Intimacy anorexia is deep. It's actually part of a deep epigenetical wounds that we carry.
Okay.
And a lot of times, in a nutshell, what that is we get to a relationship where me and you could talk very intimately about certain things.
Right.
Once I get deeper into a deeper relationship, it kind of shuts down.
Okay.
I have the inability to accept love, and sadly, I have the inability, which is sad, and also the inability to actually give love. I've done a lot of shadow work. I've done a lot of deep dive. My sobriety helps me to live with clear eyes, and acknowledging and understanding that allows me to kind of walk that.
Right.
But even beyond that, I suffer from depression, anxiety, PTSD, and the biggest issue and the elephant in the room for me always is I'm a suicide survivor, as I've attempted twice in my life. And on August 28, 2016, I lost my son to suicide. He was 17 years old, 6'4", 215 pounds, starting varsity tight end for a team that was ranked 7th in the nation. Mm. I played big ball down there. He was dealing with, I always felt that it was a perfect storm in the aspect that, number one, he was playing football. So TBIs, cracking your head from the time you could crack your head, that not so good if I look at it these days. He was dealing with a lot of what you call big T trauma issues. Him and his mother and I had some difficult relationships, so that wasn't healthy, which was why we weren't together. So there was that and the effect that the ripple effect on that has on the children. the other part of it, which also leads me to what I do for a living. I always used to say to my son, you'd never guess you were a chef's kid, because I've been a chef for better than 35 years of my life. It's
right.
been my industry my whole life. And he was caught and lived in Charleston, South Carolina, which has great high-end restaurants in the center. But you get outside the circuit, the city, it's what I call a nutrient desert.
Right.
Because we have Hudson Valley, we're so blessed because we're amongst it.
Yeah.
We have the CSAs. We have all the great farms around here. Their practices have stayed pretty traditional, which is great. We're not getting into the big agro, and we're not getting into these modifications, which, but anyhow, I used to say to him, you know, no one ever guessed you were a chef's kid, because he was Bojangles, Chick-fil-A, all that stuff. They get addicted to it.
Yeah.
It messes with your dopamine receptors. You know, you can't eat just one Dorito. You can't eat just one Pringle. You know,
right.
those Skittles, they do that in a laboratory for a reason, so you get hooked.
Right.
And, you know, we really have to look at that, and that's been my thing. I'm actually doing a class right now with kids. A lot of this stuff has just grown legs on its own.
Yeah.
You know, because we're in need of some help with mental health.
Yeah.
We're in need of help with suicide prevention. We're in need, you know, I get on the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention because they don't use that. They're not doing enough on the prevention part.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I keep highlighting that their headquarters are on Wall Street. So who are we in bed with to make, you know, their policies and stuff like
right.
that? And the fact that they don't necessarily open themselves up to different modalities.
Right. Did you forget your water? Do you want your water?
I have it right
Oh,
now.
You got it. Okay.
I just
right.
don't want spilling. I talk with my hands. As I say, I have
understood.
Nervous twix and ticks and
understood.
Stuff like that.
All right. Let's go to the intimacy thing first. Are you working on that, or have you just accepted it?
Oh, no. Well, it's acceptance. It's just understand. And again, anything that you're going through, whatever it is, whether it's depression, I did what they – I have – part of my journey has been in the past 8 years, and it's not too – it's actually right around the corner. My therapist, I do what they call brain mapping and neurofeedback.
Is that evolutionary therapy? Is that where you go?
I go to Alexis and Tetra Narrow Net. And I can always, always horrible on her last name, even though I've been going. I call her Lexi because it's just
right.
the comfortable way to go. Her last name is Lecruteris. And she was actually a prodigy of Stephen Larson, who Stephen Larson back in the day was hanging out with people like Joseph Campbell,
mm-hmm.
Ram Dass.
Right.
You know, these guys had this connection, Timothy Leary with, you know, back in the day, you know, putting the electrons on their head and stuff like that really gave us a little bit of a blueprint. Mm-hmm. And to where we are.
Right.
And technology has given us, as I'm looking at these screens here with our voices going up and down, when I put that thing on there, it's times 12.
Right.
Because that's how many different, you know, all these different brain patterns we have when you put them in the different meridians.
Right.
So the intimacy anorexia was a part of that. My impulsive part of my brain, my addictive part of my brain, and my trauma part of my brain were always on reverb. So what that becomes is that becomes when we get too close to something, we get scared.
Mm-hmm.
I've been an only child. I was in 10 different schools by the time I graduated, both from New York to California to New Jersey, all over the place. And my parents weren't in the service. Just had that self-worth issue, right?
Okay.
So therefore, that's where it started for me.
That makes
understanding
sense.
What my self-worth issue is. And sometimes when I find myself into a relationship and I'm with a good person and I have this great people surrounding me, I don't feel worthy of it,
mm-hmm.
right? And I have to do stuff that becomes like self-sabotage. You do, you know, or you get into, which was huge for me for years, was you get into superficial relationships,
mm-hmm.
right? It's
right.
based around drugs. It's based around alcohol. It's based around sex, whatever the same was. But it's never too deep. You know, I don't want to get into. I'm going to leave the married women out of the equation here.
Fair
but,
enough.
You know, I think that's best for all parties involved. But the idea that that's the type of relationship you look for because there's no strings attached, right? And we kind of have really adapted into that almost being commonplace these days. So I don't think I'm alone when I talk about intimacy and anorexia because I think it's just a really deep part of our onion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As a chef, I like to, you know, bring everything back to the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when you look at an onion, there's different layers of it. Right.
Right.
You know, it's that symmetrical thing, just like a tree has the rings. And I think that that's what it gets to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even when I went into the AA rooms and I said, hi, my name's Michael, I'm an alcoholic. That was one level of it.
Right.
But then when I got to start to peel deeper part of the onion and how I was reacting to my girlfriends and my women, the people I had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely enough, that is come full circle because, you know, it really comes down to, I don't mean to make it sound so shallow, but I wasn't hugged enough as a kid,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's a thing. You know, yep. Gabor Mate talks about this stuff and you know, myth of normal, stuff like that. I've done a lot of deep dives and I'm a seeker. So when you get into it, it becomes a whole part of a symptom, right?
Right.
And as long as you start to understand and understand the lay of the land and you become that awareness and you become that mindfulness, you actually can allow yourself, and it's, you lose a child to suicide, it's the hardest thing for me to do,
mm-hmm.
is to allow myself to love again,
right.
and to be vulnerable.
Right. And it's compounded by the fact that there are a lot of people who are in relationships who don't necessarily want you to be intimate. They're not comfortable with it either. Not that they're not comfortable with them being intimate. They're not comfortable with you being intimate and vulnerable. And it also gets compounded when you're a guy, because that brings with it stigma, which is also stupid. But intimacy is it's hard to be intimate and vulnerable. It's also hard to find somebody who wants you to be intimate and vulnerable.
It's interesting. We've come to a society, and I think it's sad. I don't think it was always this way. I think there's been a eroding of a certain intimacy level that we had. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that there was things, but there was, and I still see it because you look at me. I'm, you know, you can't see my on this, but I'm a hippie.
Take a picture of you.
I'm a hippie, right?
Right.
You know, I'm wearing a Tibetan,
which is kind of cool.
I'm wearing some Peruvian. I'm wearing a Peruvian feather here. I have my son. I have a third eye pine cone. I keep myself grounded.
Right.
Before I came here, I went to Black Creek. I walked to the river. I connected with myself. I wanted to put what manifestation did I want to come here and be able to talk about. And
what
I knew,
was the answer?
I just said I had to allow to see what happened.
Okay.
I wasn't going to control the narrative. I bought notes, and I'm only bringing notes because my mind wanders.
Right.
And I have all these, you know, these things, these attention deficits, those, all these fucking diagnostic boxes that they like to put us in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done that path, right? You know, I've been on the Zoloft. I've been on the Wellbutrin. I've been on all these other things. You know, I do have a medical marijuana license. I do, you know, and it's difficult to talk to the guys in the AA room because a drug is a drug is a drug. And I agree with that. But
do you? I don't know. I don't think I do.
I agree with that because I don't believe the solution is in that. I believe that, yes, it's helpful if you have a diagnostic condition, because I have learned you cannot shame people who are using certain things to help themselves through a crisis and whatever that might be. But I believe that that's just the bridge, right? That's just to get us to that deeper inner self. And I think that that's really what I feel some of my path has become. My path has become, I do a lot of hiking,
right?
You know, not to change it, shift gears here. But it really shows me where it's starting to come to. When I go, one of my bucket list things to do, and mind you, I'm 56 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
I told myself, I'm going to probably do this in the next 10 years. And I think I'm like 3 years in. So I got seven more years, right? I want to hike the AT. I'm an avid hiker, living in the Catskills. One of my trail names has been early on called Spiritual Barbarian.
Okay.
And the reason being is because we have gotten so disconnected to our spirituality. We have gotten so disconnected to a lot of the things that really make us who we are,
mm-hmm.
right? The Japanese say that we live with three masks. We live the masks that we show to the world, the social media masks, the ones that we show our friends and our you know, and then there's the ones that we show our close friends and our family.
Right.
And then there's the masks that we show ourselves, right? And what we got to do is we got to learn to become true to ourselves. You know, that's Jennifer and I's connection in that idea, because she talks about her authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, some people say, and it's hard for me to deal with, it's this big mind fuck to say the least, would you still be sober? Would you be advocating for mental health and suicide prevention if your son was still here?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deep breath question, right?
Right.
I mean, there's so many times people come up to me, do you forgive your son for what he did?
Blame your son for what he did?
I believe it's very much like it was an impulsive act that we couldn't walk back. Mm-hmm. And and when we went to the church, the idea, you know, I was very angry with God, of course, at that moment, and perhaps rightly so. The priest said something to me very profound. He said, you have to remember that this wasn't God's choice. Mm-hmm. This was human will.
Right.
This is what creates the racism. This is what creates the wars, right?
Right.
Is human will. When we start to separate these two and think that human will and God wills are one, it's not the same.
Yeah.
And what allowed me, that wasn't accepting to me. My thing that became accepted to me was Buddhism and Bardo and understanding what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea to allow my son to feel like he's right here with me,
mm-hmm.
or in my belief is he's actually walking around physically because they believe in reincarnation. And there's a belief that he is an angel among us at this point.
Right.
And I'd like to try to believe that that's what it is. And I truly believe that energy is never lost. It's merely transformed.
Right.
And when we think about what energy love brings, it's earth-shattering.
Yeah.
It moves mountains. It's the perhaps the most powerful part of the human condition.
What about Buddhism resonated with you or resonates with you?
Well, the idea of it's not about a god.
Right.
It's about a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's about, you know, very, and I also adapt a lot of Native American traditions about only live per footprints, think about seven generations ahead,
mm-hmm.
those sort of things that we really kind of get lost in.
Right.
And I believe we need that more in this day and age. A friend of mine, separate place, Doug Runther, has a book out called The Quantum and the Dream. And it talks about how we are on the precipice, if we believe it or not, with the crazy world we're living in. But we could be on the precipice of a, and I'm probably saying that word wrong. But
precipice.
That's it.
It's my job.
A renaissance. There's no reason why this can't be a renaissance at this point. And so many things in our world, the great renaissances of the world, came in the midst of despair.
Mm-hmm.
And when we realize this, we can kind of say, wow, this is a great self-reflection. You know, because one of the things I've looked at my whole life is, and I've always felt, especially lately, the ability to live a happy life is to be able to sit at the feet of your life and understand the lessons you're being taught, whether they be good or bad, whether they've been traumatic or not, to kind of step out and be the witness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you find different tools along the way.
You meditate?
Oh, meditate, Satanama, Dival Primal, Sanskrit, all those things that connect to the different chakras.
Mm-hmm.
I have become a Reiki practitioner. I pretty much do it either on myself or some close friends or my pets. That's about what my extent. I don't do it as a business or a practice or any mean, but.
What's your meditation practice daily? Is it daily?
It's pretty much daily. I don't really confine it to a moment because I think people get too, you know, it's crazy when people look at, you know, in America, we're so crazy. We make meditation sound so fucking complicated, and
mm-hmm.
it ain't.
Mm-hmm.
It really isn't.
It's the easiest and the hardest thing to do.
It's easy. It's just allowing ourselves to let the thoughts come and go.
Right.
My biggest idea is I do this. One of the things that helped me get to it, it was just a talking meditation that brings you through the woods, and it brings you through a field, and you're just closing your eyes, and you're seeing it. You understand that the thought that comes in, but think of that thought as just like that leaf that's floating on the stream.
Yeah.
And just let it float on by.
Yeah.
It doesn't become anything until we apply action to it, right?
Right.
So when I talk to people, and I do talk to people who have suicidal ideations, you know, you're going to have the darkness. I'm not going to make that bad thing that happened to you go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more complicated than that. But we have to learn to understand what's going on in a certain way, to have tea with it,
mm-hmm.
to give it some acknowledgement. I'm a believer, as I come in with a bunch of notes, put pen to paper or keyboard or whatever. Yeah. Whatever. I like the keyboard these days because I'm a horrible speller.
Right.
And I can't, and I've lost, sadly, I've lost my ability to do cursive because I don't do it as much. And my hands, I'm a chef, so.
It's not taught now, did you know that?
And it's not taught now.
That's crazy. My kid can't read the Declaration of Independence.
And the crazy thing about it is the reason why they went with cursive is because it was so easy to create thought.
Right. Yeah, because it was faster. You weren't holding yourself up.
Yeah. It became so much more fluid.
Yeah.
And I think that I hate to say that, you know, a big deep state, dark conspiracy things, but there are things happening. And I think that, but if you see that happening, this is part of the universe connecting. Because the storyline on how this whole thing happened and how I am actually sitting in this chair is not serendipitous and coincidental, because I don't believe in those things. I think this is something that aligns with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that has been a connection between myself and Jennifer, which is new. I've only met her just as I started organizing this event in Cornwall just last weekend.
Yeah.
John Hazaria, who, again, is another amazing individual who walks the same path as I do, and the fact that he walks in the same painful shoes because he lost his daughter to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people that – everybody that was in part of this group this weekend were – it was just like there was no political divide, which is so toxic in our environment right now, right?
Right.
And it was all courts because it's indiscriminatory, where addiction, suicide, mental health doesn't care where you're coming from.
Right.
You know, it doesn't care what your idea – you know, it's what's going on in our brains and how do we be able to understand it and be able to navigate it when we get dealt with tough life issues.
Yeah, that's one of the things meditation taught me, and so you're right. You don't stop the thinking.
And I meditate, as far as to answer your question. I'll find my way. I'll find myself meditating in line at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
I might get just like infatuated with, you know, a vegetable or something like wow, you know, just get a deep dive into, wow, I'm getting the organic carrots today, right?
right.
You know? Or I'm buying this beautiful piece of meat that, you know, is organic. I'm just, you know, kind of just, you know, finding the honor.
Yeah.
And that's what's been great with me as being a chef. I've always been part of the soil. I've never been too far away from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the industry is such, it's going away from it in my lifetime, sadly, because it, as I mentioned before, a lot of it has become factory farming and bad things. But because I'm a Hudson Valley boy, I know I live right next to a farm my whole life, is one of the greater produce fruit growers in the Hudson Valley, and multi-generational. And I've been, you know, like, wow. And now that I, and more especially when I moved away from it, you could see the difference.
Yeah.
You know, I always say to my new chefs that are coming up, and this is what I say. The home chef, it's 15 ingredients. The sous chef, it's 12 ingredients. The good chef, it's 5 ingredients. Mm. The great chef, it's 3 ingredients.
Mm.
And why do I say that? And people get confused, like, what the fuck are you talking about? The great chef seeks the ingredients. He sources it correctly. You know, one of the big things, he's not buying, you know, he's not going to buy not the highest quality of butternut squash. He's going to buy what's in season.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to buy what's readily available. He's not going to compromise that.
Right.
A little fat, a little salt, a little acid, you're done.
Off you, and you're done.
You're done. You don't need to change what nature has already given us.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the beautiful part about it. And when people start to realize that, they start to maybe think we are what we eat, and that food is our fire, because mind-gut connection is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my other part of my journey in, you know, because there's two parts of my life. There's before and after. Simple as that.
Right.
There's before, when I, you know, sadly considered myself a dad and a father, to the after, where it's kind of hard to say that anymore, right? Because my son isn't of this world at this moment.
Right.
You know, so.
Unless he is.
Unless he is. And I truly believe he is. I know this from this last weekend. But the other part of my regimen is 1/2 gallon of kombucha each week, 1/2 gallon of raw milk, which I, thank goodness, New York State allows that to happen.
That would kill me, but go ahead.
You know, well.
Me and dairy are bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that there's a different part of it, because I think we've, and that's the part where I look at. I mean, see all these allergies in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I used to walk around and say, where is this coming from?
Right.
You know, where is this coming from? I, you know, at the beginning of my industry, it wasn't like, you know, you'd get a handful every so often, but I'm getting this nightly now. You know, some sort of allergic reaction, some sort of autoimmune disease, some sort of thing that ginger, lemon, you know, anything is, and I look back on that. I'm like, how is this possible? You know, I go, why are we, you know, this way? And I relate it back to, it has to be part of our performing practices. One of the biggest people I've understood is, there's a gentleman out in Milan, Ohio. It's called the Chef's Garden. Chef's Garden is perhaps one of the most renowned. Farmer Lee Jones is his name. He's known. He's been on the Today Show. He's over there. He's, you know, the overalls with the red bow tie.
Right.
That's his scene. He's growing the best produce in the world. He teaches to use every part of that vegetable. the leaves, the roots, there's nothing that goes to waste.
Right.
My dear friend, Jamie Simpson, is what they call the chef liaison to the Culinary Vegetable Institute. Before COVID, they opened up the Vegetable Research Laboratory. My belief is a lot of the nutritional values that we're looking at on some of our vegetables that we see here in our grocery store were devised back in the 1950s and 1960s. Those nutritional values you might as well throw out the window. So that bag of baby spinach you're getting, or that strawberry that you're getting 12 months out of the fucking year, which is nuts to me, doesn't have the same nutritional value it's actually stating, because we've drawn the nutrients out of the food.
Right.
He does the opposite. He's putting the nutrients in there because back in the late 70s and early 80s, there was a big push to create superfoods, to create not just a carrot, but a super carrot.
Right.
The idea is if we put the nutrients into the food and we grow that vegetable the way that is, it's going to be, and he has now, his carrots he grows, I have a 200% greater nutrient valuable than what they actually say, because he's doing it.
Mm.
He became his claim to fame, and for my chef friends out there that might be listening, they'll know this name. Some of the people might not. But his, former Lee Jones was up against the rocks. His father actually was up against the rocks. They were going to lose the farm. A gentleman came down from Chicago. Says, whatever you grow, if you grow to my specs, I'll use every last one of them. I'll buy all your vegetables. This is how it started. That gentleman's name was Chef Charlie Trotter. And Charlie Trotter is one of my icons. He's no longer with us. But he's one of my icons in this industry and what he has actually done to bring up our level of food and bring up our profession in such a way. And the other part of it that also became, I became a chef, and our lives are too intertwined these days because of what happened to Anthony Bourdain. He was a big reason why I became a chef. Kitchen Confidential, the rawness of it, the idea is fucking tell it out as it is, man.
Right.
You know, don't hold back. The idea that I felt like a misfit too, being in the kitchen. You know, I was an addict, I was an alcoholic, but I was in with a bunch of addicts and other alcoholics.
Right.
In the kitchen, you felt at home, right? We're all a bunch of misfits in there, so let's go for it. We're all, you know, everybody's all linked up, smoking cigarettes and, you know, going out and raging like a bunch of maniacs after work.
Right.
You know, that was like, what a great job. How is it getting, and you're drinking and eating the best food.
Right.
You know, it was like, I remember when I was working at the River Cafe, sitting at the base of the River Cafe is based at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge. And I was working down there as a Culinary Institute schlep, you know, extern, looking across the way to the financial district of the world, the Twin Towers behind it, the Brooklyn Bridge, underage, sipping a gin gimlet, and just had foie gras and pan-seared sea scallops. Didn't have to pay for it. And I'm like, how does it get any fucking better than this at age 19 years of age,
right?
I'm like, right. I've arrived, right?
Yeah.
Little did I know there was much more to that story, but you know, it's amazing the tapestry we all leave behind, mm-hmm. you know? And when we start to look beyond that and start to connect these tapestries from the people that we meet, you know, so.
Just go back to meditation for a quick second.
The
thing that I learned from it is, you're going to have thoughts, but you learn to release a thought. And the way it worked for me was I learned, okay, if I can release a thought when I'm meditating, maybe I can release a thought when – and this goes straight to suicide because I saw the abyss too. If I can release a thought when I'm meditating, maybe I can release a thought when I'm not meditating. And if I can release a thought – I'm in charge of the thought. The thought doesn't control me anymore. And then you come to realize, well, a thought is just it's a random thing. It's a spore in the air. That's all it is.
It does. And I think what is important is we have to and it becomes most important because it's easy when the days are shining, right?
Right.
When everything is going your way. But when you do get throw punched by the universe, something comes from left field that comes to our lives. And I, you know, and what I call it is when you get spun out
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a difficult because now you're triggered.
Right.
Right. And now it becomes difficult to get back into that space. You have to have other tools in your toolbox to be able to kind of get off that bell curve, you know, get off
reset.
That high energy bell curve to get you back to that, you know, our normal state. And those become, I call it, there's different things called havening, which is kind of just giving yourself a hug.
Mm-hmm.
There's EFT, which you're just giving yourself some tapping on your meridians. One of the ancient ones I do, and I do this a lot, is called Satanama, Satanama, mm-hmm. applying 2 pounds worth of pressure to each fingertip.
Right.
And saying it, and you could say it out loud if you're in the car, you could say it, you know, loud, because it's good to say it out loud because mm-hmm. it starts to mess with your neuro, it starts to change your neural pathways in your brain.
Right.
Or you could just say it in silence, which I do a lot, you know, and, you know, rub your, always, when you're in those moments, you have to understand that self-care becomes first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because otherwise it becomes, you can go down a very slippery slope. And I always feel that sometimes when I get triggered, it's, you don't, trigger can happen in an instant in an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
To get unwind from that trigger, to get out of that cycle, can take a week. It can take a month.
Right.
I've gone down that dark hole and that rabbit hole for a while and had to use every tool in my resource to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest tool for me, as I mentioned before, was hiking.
Right.
You know, I believe that there's actually some studies out there. It's called the 3-day effect.
Mm-hmm.
The device goes away. You spend 3 days in the woods. It's Mother Nature's reboot.
Mm-hmm.
You lessen your depression. You lessen your anxiety. You lessen your internal thoughts because now you're only worried about what's in front of you.
Right.
You're living in the present.
Right.
Which is so important because we don't live that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always rushing to go somewhere or we're trapped in what happened yesterday. And meanwhile, in the AA room says that means you're pissing all over today.
Right. Right.
You're pissing all over the present.
Do you view, so the addictive issues you have are chronic, meaning they're going to be with you for the rest of time, right?
I feel that I've become ability to not let them go to being something that I'm going to be, you know, I can, you know, I've been off of alcohol for 8 years.
Right.
I've been pretty much sober my whole life, you know, since then. I mean, I do 2 things. As I say, I do have a medical marijuana license. I have that for PTSD issues. I stick to what the script says.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get into the gummies. I don't get into the fucking beverages. I don't get into all the
right.
quote unquote recreational versions of that. I'm a hippie, so I stick to the flower.
Right.
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 The other thing that I've worked with, especially with my therapist that does, because she's working with my brain, you want to be honest with a person when they're putting their electrodes in your brain. The other part that I've worked with is the psilocybin and the microdosing.
How's that going?
It really helps around triggering days. Mm-hmm. It's really, especially in the past, I haven't gone to it as much because I don't feel I've needed it as much.
Right.
I used to use it a few years ago during the dates.
Mm-hmm.
My son's angelversaries, yeah. His birthday, the holidays, the weeks beforehand would be so nerve-wracking to me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that here I am 8 years later, that my son is no longer here, that I'm not needing to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm finding a different way. Now, I don't know if it was because they have it does have an ability to change that. And also, because I'm doing a deeper dive now, I'm actually doing like a constellation family. I'm actually going to another even because when people, what I want to make sure people understand when they're going through grief and they're going through healing, no matter what it is, it's not linear.
Right.
It's a sphere. So you're always going to be rehatching. You're always going to be resurfacing on some issues in a deeper part of the onion, as I talked about. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to find ways to kind of navigate those waters. And now I'm doing what they call a constellational healing, kind of going back to heal that 7-year-old little child in me.
Okay.
Right.
What's constellational healing?
It's kind of like a shamanic type of dealing. It's going back to your ancestors. And my family history is, that's a whole other show together. My grandfather, and sadly, it's kind of crazy. I believe he was kind of like the Elon Musk of his day.
Okay.
And how I mean this is he was the lead engineer on the 34th Street subway system. He was the lead engineer on the Holland Tunnel. He was building the Delaware Aqueduct, the Panama Canal. He was essentially creating all the civil engineers journals up into the 1936 until he died tragically in a car accident.
Okay.
And left my mother, his daughter, and his 3 children, and deeper story, and my grandmother, you know, he was 27 years her senior.
Okay.
So she was a young 20-something year old with 3 kids, and this rich man of this day all of a sudden tragically dies in a car accident up by Liberty, New York. And here I am telling truths that have been buried for 70 years with his mistress, I always wondered why my grandmother never took on his last name, because it was a name that had the prestige to it.
Right.
Turns out she was never married. My Irish side of the family calls her what she was called, a breeder.
Mm-hmm.
Came over. My mother was born 9 months later, a few months later. My uncle was born 9 months, a few months later. And tragedy, deep epigenetical wounds are the story of the family.
Right.
On my father's side of the family, we've had 4 suicides, my son being the 4th.
Mm.
I would love to have mental health go into the doctor's office and not just ask the questionnaire of, do you have cancer run in your family, heart disease run in your family, high blood pressure, all these things, and does any of these other things? And they're starting to do this now,
mm-hmm.
but it's not often enough, and we're playing behind the curve here. Mind you, we live in the Hudson Valley. We have a mighty Hudson River that flows between us, which has multitudes of bridges. The walkway over the Hudson right now has more jumpers than the Vezzanero's Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other bridges combined are getting pretty scary. I live close to the river, and I sometimes see the helicopters flying up and down pretty regularly, especially in the summer months and stuff like that. And I'm always like, no, that's not. And I'm always hypersensitive to it because of my situation.
Right.
And I'm always like, no, that's not what it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm deep down inside, I'm like, that's damn well what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you... All right, so when... Did your son leave a note?
No. My son was spun out. My son, the other part of his... He was numbing himself because the other part of his trauma was he was becoming a baby daddy.
Okay.
He was a senior in high school. He was struggling with the fact to be the senior jock on this team that was, he was called Little Gonk after Gronk, after right. Gronkowski. 6'4", 215 pounds, is not a small boy.
That is not a small boy.
You know, I used to send him to Clemson football camp to let him know, understand how big the game could get.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, Clemson was in the BCS finals every year after he passed, because he passed in 2016 that year. And universal karma, when Coach Smiley turned around and beat Alabama, that they weren't supposed to beat, with 17 seconds left to go in the game. And he gets on national TV after I'm watching the game, and they won with that. And it was, I think the play was amazing. He turns around on national TV, says, how did you win the game, coach? We won it on love.
Mm.
Fucking tears just,
yep.
I was bawling.
Right.
Like he met my son.
Right.
You know, so the idea that I felt somehow my son was on that field that night,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
You know, that's where he wanted to be. And as an angel, you can kind of be wherever you want.
Right.
And perhaps multiple times, right?
Did your attempts come – your attempts came after that?
No.
Oh, before that?
I talked to – I'm in the process, and somebody told me I need to get back into it because it might be part of my purpose is to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I already have the name of the book. The book is called Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll, and Suicide.
Okay.
The opening part of the book says – there's enough topics to the first 3 subjects.
Right.
This is about the final one that's difficult to talk about.
Right.
Because I talked to my son about sex, drugs, rock and roll, but I never talked to him about the demons in his head.
Mm-hmm.
I was 17 years old. My folks were in Aruba. I had a suicide note on the back of the door. I was coming off a major bender of coke addiction at the time. And I sat in the garage. Back in the day, that's how they did it.
Yeah.
And... something, grace of God, something got me out of there. I crumpled up the note, never talked about it again, ever.
You just had an epiphany of not today.
Not today.
Right.
And the next time that happened, again, another drug-induced thing. My uncle had just passed away. I've had my father died when I was in 5th grade, right? I've had trauma my whole life. I've been in that traumatic state my whole life, which led me to the intimacy anorexia, led me to the addictions, led me to all this stuff to numb that fucking pain.
Right.
Right. I thought I was arrived. My uncle and I got into business. My grandmother was a matriarch of the family, died. We were going to create this beautiful better. He wanted to open a restaurant. I said, you're fucking crazy to open a restaurant. You lose your shirt. Mind you, I'm a chef that works in the restaurant business. 80% failure. There's a reason. Become a catering venue. Become a venue. That way we pass you don't have to put no money in because the customer's paying for everything, right?
Right.
The property that we once had was 15 acres of land that overlooked the Hudson River. My grandfather's estate, the 15 acres is now 5 acres that has been bestowed to me and my mother because we're the last one standing.
Mm.
A lot of story in between that. But what happened at the second suicide attempt was my uncle had passed away. We had just toeholed each other together financially into opening a restaurant, and we were going to become the catering, exclusive catering to my grandmother's estate called Evelyn's View, and we were going to rock the fucking place, right?
Right.
We were doing already 37 weddings a year. It was already ready to roll. 9 months into opening the restaurant, he drops dead of a heart attack, doesn't have a will.
Oof.
Had a next of kin, his daughter, that he always embraced his daughter, blah, blah, blah. I sometimes, and I know this could be come back to bite me at some point, but there's a line in Officer and a Gentleman, how do you know who your daddy is just because your mama told you so?
Right.
He was in Pensacola, Florida in boot camp, met the mother of his daughter. He went off to Vietnam. He came back from Vietnam, and now he had a daughter. He was an heir to some money. He was an heir. He was opening his own business. He became quite wealthy. He owned a local business in the Hudson Valley for close to 30 years. He had a shit ton of money. My mother and I do not. We were living on his coattails, dad to say, but, you know, now we're bestowed with the whole thing. I truly believe that's epigenetical karma, making things right.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, my mother was bullied her whole life by her brothers and her mother. So, as I say, when we get into the deep part of how I became who I am, it's about breaking that cycle.
Right.
Because you have to. You either, if you don't break it, you're going to be doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And I know one thing, I have to find a way to break that cycle. And if I can break that cycle within myself, I'm only healing myself. And if I can spread that to other people, now we got something cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I say in the kitchen, we're cooking. Now we're cooking with butter.
Right. Right.
You know? So that's kind of how a lot of that, yeah, you know, and each one of these things is.
So you're talking about your second attempt.
My second attempt, my uncle had passed, I was running a restaurant that was really floundering and wasn't making any money now because my money man died. I got really, you know, I went to the dark side of the restaurant business. I hired a guy that was a dealer. I hired a guy that was a VIG. I hired a woman that ran a call girl service. Let's just say we became pretty infamous pretty quick, but
diverse revenue streams.
Diverse revenue streams. And we got popular. The problem was I hooked up with the wrong person. He said to me, he's like, it's okay if you're not my best customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
3 months in, I was his best customer, mm-hmm. right? Then things started to change for me. And this restaurant was called, it was actually called Nikolai's. I named it after my son. I did it a little weird way I did it, but it was called Nikolai's. It's actually the former Newburgh Yacht Club. And anybody who knows that place, it's now Pamela's Traveling Feast. And anybody that knows that place, it's got the best view of in Newburgh. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks of the waterfront. Newburgh Yacht Club has the best view because it's so close to the bridge.
Right.
It looks at the bridge. Well, I was at my said restaurant, completely inebriated, ready to go. Took a fistful of Klonopin, had my 8-ball of Coke already done and gone. And I was ready to take a walk to that bridge and just say bye.
Right.
I've had angels in my life. I had an angel in my life that day. She got in my way. She made me feel valued. And she got me the help I needed in that moment.
Mm.
And that's the thing I will talk about my son. It's about that moment. Too many people get caught into the moment that we can't walk back. And it's so important to be able to reach out for help in that moment and to recognize it in that moment from the person you might be reaching out to. When somebody reaches out to you, you might be their last thread. Mm-hmm. We have to go at it like that, you know, and not just be like, oh, I'll get back to you later.
Did you reach out to this person?
What's that?
The angel that, for your second attempt, did you reach out?
Oh, she was right there in front of me.
She was right there. Okay.
She was right there in front of me. And today, to this day, she still helps me. She's a nurse now. She's going on with her life. She's actually healing a lot of other people. It was obviously her destiny to heal people, right? So this was before she started all in doing that, but that became her future in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she was my girlfriend at the time, and she just knew enough to say, you know something, this is not good. This, you know, for me at that moment, I ended up going up to the old St. Francis, which is still where the psych center is, and that's where my early journey started, but I wasn't done that. I wasn't done then. You know, I thought, you know, it got me stopped. I mean, big part of my journey is when I talk to people, I bring in my AA chips, the white ones.
Mm.
I got 8 of them.
Mm.
How many times did I try to get sober? More than eight, I will tell you that much. Right. But those were the ones that made it a month.
Right. Right.
You know, so it's like I tell people that keep coming, you know, keep trying, keep working to try to do the best version of yourself. And you're only going to be able to do that is once you get outside your comfort zone. Because that's what, you know, what we were talking about, the intimacy anorexia and the sad part of what I'm seeing society at. We're all trauma bonding. Mm-hmm. We're caught into this narcissistic personality disorder that, you know, oh, but wait a minute, what are you carrying? You know, here I am talking about me, but I don't know what you might be carrying.
Right.
Right. And let's make sure that it's, we're, you know, if I'm going to help you, we're both just going to, as Jerry said, we're just going to walk each other home. Right.
Right.
You know, my ringtone is Ripple, right? Mm. The that's what we're doing, you know, and that force is, that's that ripple force, you know, mm-hmm. the ripple effect of this conversation, the ripple effect of Jennifer's conversation, the ripple effect of all your conversations before, you know, it's getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And that's what my hope is with this, you know, my biggest advocacy, and I'd be in big trouble if Terry listens to this and I don't mention Healthy Minds for Children.
Hi, Terry. Which,
you know, which would be the biggest thing for her, because this has been her path for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And the basic fundamental story about it is we're trying to get 15 to 20 beds
right.
for children having a mental health crisis here in the Hudson Valley. So they don't have to go down to the city and they don't have to go to Albany, or they don't have to just sit there in the fucking emergency room for 17 hours, because the courage it takes to get into the emergency room.
Do you know Krista Hines?
Yes, I believe so. Yes, yes.
I'll introduce you.
Yes, I believe so.
She runs Hudson River Housing.
Okay, yeah.
She has built over 1,500 homes
okay.
for people experiencing homelessness.
Yeah, yeah.
She just built a center called Pat's Place, which is just, it's just a house and kids go there after school.
Okay, okay.
And there's activities there. You can do your homework there, but it's just a safe place to go.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I'll connect you with her. She can make 15 beds happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, to try to, and because I go to the bobbleheads, I go to the politicians. I've been at the Dutchess County legislators more times than I can count. I've been in meetings with all these guys. They buy, oh, we need it, we need it, we need it. But nobody has the stones,
right.
cojones, to really put themselves on the line. And if they do, I get concerned with what's the modality we're going to talk about.
Right.
If we're just going to open up a place that we're going to put these kids in diagnostic boxes and feed them Ritalin all day, we ain't doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to start with the gut. It's got to start with getting their good microbiome going, getting them good practices and a meditation, getting them good practice right. on mindfulness. So therefore,
exercise.
Getting
I
them,
think that's why you like hiking, because exercise changed a lot for me, because I was the same thing. I was on 7 different pills and ready to go. And I'll tell you, listener, fast forward a minute and 15 seconds. So I was facing 350 years in jail, diagnosed with 7 bipolar, schizophrenic, blah, blah, taking 7 different pills. One of them is lithium. Lithium to me is toxic.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's turned into poison in my body. So the pill that I'm taking so I don't kill myself is actually killing me anyway.
Right, yeah.
And I make the decision to I cut everything off, just cold turkey. My whole world leaves me because they're like, except for my daughter, leaves me because they're like, we don't want to be around this shit storm when it goes off. So I go cold turkey. I do a summer of withdrawal. It was fucking horrible. But when I get done, I'm going to take my life. But my daughter was with me through the withdrawal, and I think, okay, if I take my life, that's what she's going to learn. All her hard work was nothing. So we have a lot in common. So I said, okay, I think I have a chronic condition. I'm going to have it every day and have to treat it every day. So I get up, I write 300 pages, got to be paper, and I work out 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I make good and I meditate and I just make good decisions for that day. And it's a very AA approach. But the reason I told you that was the exercise, the moving your body, is so, and I didn't realize how important it was. But you carry the shit with you physically. Once you eat, you can meditate and let it go up here, but it's still.
And there's just people who understand when they go hiking with me. It's they always like, you know, I'm notorious for this. Like, oh, they, you know, we're gonna go hiking, and you know, it's like, well, how long?
Taking a walk.
They figure we're taking a walk.
Yeah.
And here it is, like 4 or 5 hours later.
Yeah.
and we're just, you know, we're coming down as the sun's, you know, right. we're, you know, you bring night lights, you bring me headlamps and shit like that. And people are like, you know, they're just like, here, yeah. they thought they were just going out for an hour, 90 minute yeah. type of thing. And here it is like, I'm notorious for it. And I'm always, and I play dumb with it. Oh, I guess I miss, you know, but honestly, towards the end, as my son got to be the age he was, as he got caught into the devices, as he got caught into the games, as he got caught into the girlfriends, that was our way out. Because mm-hmm. I said, you know something? I can't fight that. I can't compete with that.
Right.
You know, I couldn't beat him at basketball anymore. You know, right. I took up tennis. You know, I took up some sports that I could hold my own with him, but right. it's only going to be a matter of time. So I said, hiking. Let's get out. We did the Adirondacks. We went up to Maine. We were actually, our biggest thing was starting to do whitewater rafting. So we had done the Indian Gorge. We'd done the Penobscot up in Maine. The next one was supposed to be down in Asheville. You know, he picked out once. He wanted to do this one in South America, which I was like, we're going to have to wait on that one. But right. I liked his enthusiasm. I loved his enthusiasm.
Right.
You know, so it was, people died on that one. I'm like, we got to work up to that one, yeah. you know. But it was just the idea that then it became mano a mano. Mm-hmm. You shedded everything.
Yeah.
You know, and it became, we had those, I mean, those were the, you know, it was such a, you know, I had such good quality time with him. And even though I had some difficult relationships, as I was mentioning before, the interest me, and right. of course my son was around, one of the things that was the consistent is when my son was around, I didn't really have a girlfriend at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if I did,
right.
it was just like, so what are you guys doing? Oh, we're going down to a Yankee game today.
Right.
Father and son. Because I miss that because my son, one of the greatest memories I had with my father, because I didn't have many because he died at such a young age and right. divorced, and he was an avid baseball fan. Mm-hmm. He turns around and he says, look at that guy playing down there for the Milwaukee Brewers, number 44. It was Hank Aaron. I was such a young kid. I didn't know who the hell he was, blah, blah, blah. Didn't really resonate with me then. But of course, after my father passed, you know, I wanted to make sure I could share that same memory with him. So we saw Derek Jeter numerous times, the Fab Four, all that stuff. And it reminded me that when I was in that, sitting on my father's lap down the third baseline, looking at Hank Aaron, Thurman Munson was on that field that, you know,
wow.
Bucky meant. You think yeah. now you start to look back at the deeper part of the onion.
Yeah.
What a fucking team that was,
right.
you know, from yep. a Yankees perspective,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And also having the idea of the home run king around, and I right. still think he is because it was before the age of juicing. And all that.
Yeah, pre-juice. Yeah, yeah. Yep, I'm with
yeah,
you on that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so it's all these beautiful tapestries of our lives that we come together. And I hate to say it, but the love and the grief become intertwined and it becomes such part of the human condition and where people connect.
Yeah.
You know, because when we get down to the rawness of it, because there's nothing that splits you up more than getting a tragic, you know, news in some capacity, yeah. whatever that might be.
Yep.
You know, sometimes it's medical, but let's try to heal ourselves before we get to the tragic news. Let's get the people help before they're getting to the bridge.
Right.
Let's giving them the healthy practices on how to be, and let's make a society that's better to do that and more geared to do that.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we're heading in that right direction because there's more conversations like this happening. That event we did this past weekend, we got $18,000.
That's fantastic.
We actually helped somebody that heard me on the radio. And for the 20 seconds that Greg gave me up on DST,
right.
she heard me on the radio in that moment, came all the way down from Red Hook to Cornwall because she lost her significant other on August 30th, just this right. past August 30th. So the rawness was it.
Yeah.
She came down and she was in tears, but we showered her with love because she was in the right place.
That's how pervasive this shit is. It's you know? Everywhere. I wrote a one-man show about music. I play guitar.
Uh-huh. Yes, I know that. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
And so I did a one-man show. And when I debuted it, it was like 200 people, right? And I sing this one song about I wrote a song about the decision to take my own life because I know that fulcrum really well, and I finish it, and this guy comes charging the stage, 6'4", 250-pound ball biker jacket thing, and I'm like, please tell me that like I didn't in my former life fuck your girlfriend, please. Like I thought it was the end, man.
Yeah.
And it's the middle of the show, and he grabs me and he's sobbing, And he's like, I was going to kill myself too, and my daughter saved my life. Right. And it's just you, it's just so random. Like, you get 20 seconds on the radio, and
yeah, it's there.
It's there. It's everywhere. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What do you think traditional psychotherapy gets right, and what do you think it gets wrong?
Well, what I've believed is, number one, talk therapy is very important. You know, being able to find somebody that you're comfortable with. And I've been to therapists my whole life at different levels.
Right.
Some were good. Some were not so good.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just, and you have to make sure that you're with the right person. And mm-hmm. that's not easy to do because they're hard to find.
Right.
You know, it's not like they're around. I do believe that they get too quick to put people into diagnostic boxes, and they go too quick to put you on prescriptions. Because that's what the insurance companies want you to do. That's what Big Pharma wants you to do.
Right.
And that typically isn't the answer. The answer needs to be a little bit different modalities. That's why I advocate for the brain mapping, because there's big talk about it. Is how do we understand what's going on with the person's brain unless we look?
Right.
We look at every other thing. We look at our heart. We look at our bones. We look at all these different yep. things. We have the ability. We have the technology. And if we can look at a person's brain and say, you know something, it's firing off in these, because we know what different meridians right. of our brain do. So if we can understand this, yep. then maybe we can, I wish I did this 20 years ago.
Right.
It could have saved me a lot of heartache. Could have saved me a lot of misery.
Right.
The fact that I never spoke to my son about the dark parts of our brain. I spoke to him about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And, you know, obviously maybe not enough about sex, because I have 2 grandchildren, which is another part of the story, that he was running wild with another woman. And the other part of his life that he started doing towards the end was alcohol and Xanax.
Mm.
2 things that you can kill if you stop, you kill, that will, could, is very dangerous to yourself.
Right.
Stopping both of those cold turkey.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he was trying to do.
Right.
Without doctor. And so there was a whole, as they say, there was a perfect storm that happened that day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't just the one thing. The fact that he didn't get through it, and the fact that society, you know, the therapist that I brought him to said he was making bad life choices.
No shit.
I'm 56 years of age. I'm like, come on. The CPS worker I brought it in said he's 17. He's probably going to fall through the cracks. The police officer I called 24 hours before and he took his life was teaching me on what it meant to be a good dad. You know, so we're not going into this with the open eyes of, you know, wait a minute. The therapist should have gone into him saying, wait a minute, he's going to become a teenage dad. Wait a minute, he's been playing football. Wait a minute, he's not eating right. He's like, let's kind of look at this as a diagnostic
right.
scenario, because everybody's different.
Right.
You know, so let's get to the root of the cause.
That's the challenge. That's what I think is wrong with talk therapy is you're trained in a scientific, you're trained with the scientific method. In an academic,
mm-hmm.
and in an academic school, and you're trained to perform a science,
right?
And in order to get credibility, psychotherapy approached it, started with the message of we're the same as medicine, mm-hmm. as physical medicine, and they had to do that because they had to be taken, and there's some benefit to saying that too, because mm-hmm. it is an illness. But treating the illness, to your point, treating the illness is an art form as much as it is a science. And unless you're taught the art, you can have all the science you want, which is why right. pills go flying out of doctors' offices so fast.
Right.
I taught the science. I'm not taught the art.
And it's important, because one of the things, why does the AA rooms work? You know, it's not white cloak doctors and therapists and psychoanalysts. And
right.
it's the idea that one of the people that said to me and got me sober, and it's a story that I use in a variety of different ways. You know, you're going through life and you're in a ditch. The ditch keeps getting deeper because, you know, you're not able to become identified, and it keep, you know, and eventually you've alienated your friends, you've alienated your family, and you're getting deeper. You're now faced with perhaps jail time or mandated shit and stuff like that. So you're really pretty in a deeper hole every time, right?
Right.
Finally, you're looking up in this huge hole. You're just barely seeing the light. And you say, can you help me out of the ditch? And the guy says, yes, I got you. And he jumps in the ditch with you.
Right.
Because he's been there before. And those are the things that really become so profound. And that's why...
That's why I think somebody like you is so important. You just said it perfectly. Somebody like you is so important because... I was saying this to my wife the other day. If you've been in the stew, in the ditch, whatever, you can smell it on people who have been there.
Right.
And you like same thing I would imagine with the rooms. You know what an alcoholic looks like. You can feel it.
And they can't hide it.
You can't hide it.
Once you're sober, who are you fooling? Right.
Right. Stop your nonsense.
Seen this show before. Yeah. Yeah. Read the book, right?
But I think it might be even like a vibrational thing, but because you share that same vibration with somebody, you can talk to somebody about mental health and in 45 minutes do the same work that it might take a therapist 45 months to do because there's instant trust.
Right.
Oh, I know. Mike's been there before. I can see it.
Well, that's what's actually happening.
That's what's so important, though, that's what's so important with what you're doing or like what Jennifer's doing. People who have been there have the most powerful voice.
It's the most powerful. It's actually what's doing a lot of the legwork with vets. You know, one of the people I walk with a lot because veterans of 22 a day. That was pre-COVID numbers, by the way. I don't think they're talking about it. But the idea that 22 veterans a day take their life to suicide, right? The rooms that I walk in of survivors of suicide, they're parents of vets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Their son was deployed in whatever, Afghanistan, Iraq, and they come back here. And they can't talk to a normal talk therapist.
No.
They have to talk to somebody who's fucking been there before.
Got it, yeah.
Who understands what it means. And I've met some serious soldiers along the way, literally in that way, and heard their stories of like, how is this even possible? You had guys over there that were charged $1 million worth of equipment, people, other brothers and sisters of the, you know... And they come back here, they're stronger than, you know, strong like ox and strong like bull, and come back here and somehow lose their thread.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow. It's just like, you know, it doesn't matter how big, how small, whatever it is, or what they've been through. But the idea is to be able to recognize and identify with somebody who has been there before is so powerful, right?
It is. And I think it takes the place of, or it's so much more important than advice. Like when you said the therapist said he's making bad decisions, no shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That has absolutely no value.
Right.
But sitting with somebody who says, look, I get it. This is going to take a hot fucking minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm here. You could get here. Right. If I could do this, you could do this. That shaves off months of talk therapy.
I mean, it's so important to understand that you always have to meet somebody where they're at.
Right.
Which is why I talk about the prescriptions and try not to shame people because sometimes early in the thing, that's what you might need.
Absolutely.
You know, because
to get your brain to a state where it could receive anything.
Receive anything, exactly. So always look at that and be saying, okay, this is what I need for the moment.
Right.
And as long as you continue to seek into your own self-care and keep getting a deeper part of your onion, you can find ways to heal yourself. And in doing so, you're actually creating a ripple effect with that.
Right.
And that's how we heal the world. And I always say, if you're able to help a child through a mental health crisis, you not only help that child become a better son and a daughter or a brother and sister, but later on in life, a better husband and wife, a better mother and father. So we have the ability, when we help out the child, to help out generations of kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's where my focus is because of obviously my son's age at forever 17.
Right.
And the idea that, you know, it's important if I could have just got him, personal story with him and I, is I lived in South Carolina and I'm a big philosophy guy, right?
Right.
So we would do this hand cut thing and I put it all these great quotes from Jesus to Confucius to Buddha to Einstein. And in the center, it said, know thyself. And it had all these major collages all around. And I used to tell him, when life is tough, go to your board. Meditate on your board, because that's what I would tell him to do. Go meditate on your board. Look at know thyself and look at all the questions that surrounded it, because it is, the answers are in front of us. If we're willing to ask the questions and ask the selves of the questions.
Right.
And then do the work.
Right.
And I had the exact same board at his house, at my house up in New York, that he had in South Carolina.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was parallel. And it was very remedial made, because we made it when he was in, like, you know, seventh grade, right? But we kept it together the whole time, you know?
That's awesome. It doesn't have to be a work of art.
It doesn't
have
to
work.
It just has to work. Yeah. And I always, and I get upset because in that moment, the answers were on his board.
Yeah. But to your point about medicine and the use of medicine,
right.
Sometimes you can't see. Sometimes you don't see those answers. They're sitting right there.
Yeah, and I also get a little leery of the industry that's responsible for a lot of the addictions.
Yeah,
is going to be responsible for healing us.
Right, right.
I believe Vinny from Ryan's House. I do a lot of work with Ryan's House, and also Hope Rocks. That's another group I'm involved with.
Oh,
yeah, with Joe DeFino up there.
And, we did the,
and you were up there with Joe. I think this past year.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. With the
I'm on the
project.
Advisory board with him.
Oh,
and,
wonderful.
And I've been there for. I wasn't able
He's
to go.
Great man.
He's an amazing individual. Yeah. We're actually in a point of time of restructuring because when the first Hope Rocks, there were like close to 3,000 people for the weekend.
Right.
And since then, the numbers have started to decline. I think there was 900 people this past weekend.
Right.
What's happening? What's the disconnect? We don't want to put a beer tent up on it because it kind of defeats the purpose.
Right.
But if you put the beer tent in, people will come.
Yes.
I hate to say it like that, but it's kind of where we're stuck. Why did liquor stores have to stay open during COVID?
Right.
If people don't realize why, then they're not really being honest with themselves.
Yeah. I mean, philosophically, I had to put the beer tent, man. I'd rather you be holding a beer and get a message that makes you put the beer down
and I tell
than
you,
not go at all.
And that really became my epiphany in this last event, right?
Right.
Because I'm a restaurant, I'm a bar.
Right.
People came in, people enjoyed themselves. They were able to reach out and talk. Sometimes the booze loosens you up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a natural. And at least they're like, if they weren't coming up for themselves, they were coming up for a loved one, you know? And I think that was, I had so many conversations, not just the person that came there in severe grief, but so many people that had a loved one that was going through something and where to get the help. And I really think that what I would love to do and what my mission is hoping to do with this beautiful property that I'm talking about is to create a land trust. And create a consortium. And the idea that we can create these mental health agencies of MHA, of Act Through Music, of Hope Rocks, of Maya Gold Foundation, and all these beautiful mental health communities that are doing all the Healthy Minds for Children, all these great communities, instead of them living in silos, pandering to the same donation dollar, because that's what they're all doing, to somehow, how can't we get them to kind of work as a consortium and a collaboration and be able to kind of make that voice louder.
Mm-hmm.
So now these fucking bobblehead politicians have to listen to us.
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
Because now
And
strength in numbers, my friend.
There is. And the other thing I like about your approach, too, is you said something very true earlier that, you know, it's not one size fits all with mental health. And what Hope Rock's message may resonate more with me than Healthy Minds for Children's or vice versa.
Right, right.
But if I'm seeking help, it's so much work to contact an organization and go down that path and then find out they're not right and then contact another organization. So if there's one spot
I mean,
where all of you all are.
And living in that world, because I had to do the same thing.
Right.
The courage it takes to reach out for help.
Oh, yeah.
In the first place. And then if we're going to reach out for help and they're going to fumble it on the other side. You've lost your opportunity because the people aren't going to put themselves through that again.
Yep.
They're going to turn around like what's happening over the walkway off of the Hudson. Why is that happening over the Hudson? Because that's where the mental health facility is.
Right.
They're going in there. They're not getting the work, the help that they need. And they're just like, enough's enough.
Tell you a quick story. So I'm suicidal. I get arrested.
Right.
350 years. I'm suicidal. So I tell my wife. And my sister. And I'm like, guys, if I don't get help today, I can't today's Tuesday. I can't promise you Wednesday.
Yeah.
I need help. Call my general practitioner. Go see the general practitioner. Well, of course you're stressed out. You're facing 350 years in jail. Fine. Here's pills. These pills take like 4 weeks to kick in.
Right, right.
So, blah, blah, blah.
Neurotransmitters take time. Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, no. There's something wrong. And there happened to be a neurologist in the same building. Go see the neurologist. Yeah, we're gonna screen you. You know, this is September. What are you doing in November? And I'm like, by November, I'll be very horizontal.
Right, right.
Couldn't get in. So we couldn't get any help. This is all one day. So we go to this facility. I won't name the facility, but I'll tell you when we're done. We go to this facility that's for this. Wouldn't take me.
Right.
We're too full. I'm like, I'm actively being driven around seeking help, crying in the backseat of a car. Can't get any. It's just amazing.
Most expensive healthcare in the world, by the way, right?
Is mental health care.
No, I'm just saying in America. We have the highest, we pay the most.
Yes, most expensive, and it's allegedly the best, but you can't get it.
Only when you have the money for it, right?
And even then.
And even
I
then,
had the money.
And even then, you can't get it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, in mental health, it's barely existent, you know? There is a place that has given me hope in this path because I've been looking across the nation.
Right.
I'm like, okay, if I wanted to find something that would be a place that had 15 to 20 mental health beds for kids having crisis, who's got one?
Right. What's the model look like? Yeah.
What's the model look like?
Yeah.
And actually, it's an interesting, a friend of mine, there's a place out in Santa Barbara, California, I believe.
Okay.
But it's not finance. It's a philanthropist.
Right.
It's a rich guy that said, we're going to do this.
I get
this.
It. We're going to do it. Yeah.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
So, and it's great. It's a crisis center. It's got outpatient stuff. It's got different modalities. And I think that is, to me, it's the best template I see,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I do think that, you know, some of this stuff does become a little bit inherent just to the American condition, right? Because we are so stressed out. Our food, as I say, our food chain is a little fucked up to say the least.
Yeah.
The McDonald's sandwiches that we get here is not the McDonald's sandwiches in there.
Right.
That we get in Europe. Can we at least have European standards for Christ's sake?
Right. I'm a Democrat. Right. I'm not all that upset with RFK taking a look at the food, man.
Well, not to get into the political thing, I I've always been an independent. I'm a Ross Perot guy.
Ross for boss, man.
Right?
Yep.
Honestly, when this election came up, I was a Bobby Kennedy supporter.
Yep.
I was with him not too far ago over here at the thing. And his big reason was because I've been with him. I've been with him because of the Hudson River.
Right.
I've been with him because of Monsanto. I've been with him in every step of the way when he was, quote unquote, the good guy.
Right.
Right. He was the guy that was standing up to him. What happened was during COVID, he stood up against the vaccines about the efficacy of it. And I completely wholeheartedly agree.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not going to test these things and then we're going to just get everybody injected with them. And now I see people that shouldn't have cardiac arrests or have blood, you know, I know people who have, you know, seizures, and I know people I'm not completely convinced that they're quote unquote all that safe, right?
I'm with you. I'm so with you, man.
And I
felt so bad after the second vaccine.
And bomb trains and stuff that go. I mean, he's on the board of all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and the only reason I did what I did because I didn't think they were going to win, for one.
Mm-hmm.
I went in there and I said, I'm just going to stick with, but I was more interested in the local stuff anyhow, because that's how change happens.
Right.
You know, I've heard people, because he got elected, have taken their lives because of him.
Yeah.
Because it's so, and I want to say that my idiot should be liable for that.
Yeah.
Because I watched my mother the same way at 83 years of age with Parkinson and Lewy body dementia getting spun out because she's listening to some news broadcast or some radio show or not radio, it's always TV. But the idea that it's like, I'm like, Mom, I'm going to turn the cable off.
Yeah.
You know, your law and order is over, man. No more law and order for you.
It's garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in and garbage out. And until you find ways to seek, you know, do you find ways to kind of do the healing? I do a lot of Gabor Mate, he's perhaps a world-renowned person on trauma. Also, another great book is The Body Keeps Score, which talks about that inner child and some of these things that we really have to understand. And if we understand that at an earlier age, because the kids are smart now.
Yeah.
Right? They're a lot smarter than we were going up. I mean, you know, maybe I could fix the flat tire on the side of the road, but, you know, I wasn't whizzing by an electric bike.
Right.
Like, they don't even have to fucking pedal anymore. Are you kidding me?
It's right.
Like, what's going on? So, but the idea is that, you know, they have this ability. And I know this because some of these kids come in. I'm teaching them tomorrow. I got 15 kids tomorrow and the next day. They're coming into my kitchen.
Mm.
Because they have ADD, most of these kids, they have a 5-minute attention span, right?
Yeah.
I'm interesting enough opening it up with an old school Anthony Bourdain cook store. I already picked out the episode. It's going to talk about my industry, right? They're going to come in. They're going to actually sit. They're going to come in, and I'm going to let them understand the importance of sitting at the table without the devices.
Yeah.
And what it means to have a human conversation with each other. And the importance and how we've lost that, and we need to rekindle that. So I've created this thing called the fuel. I came up not too long ago. Feed the Fire.
Okay.
It's a mind, body, brain fuel for the next generation program. And I just literally pulled it out of my ass. And Jennifer kind of encouraged me to realize you need to really create like a modality. What is it? Modular. So instead of me coming in and just shooting from the fucking hip all the time, because that's what I do.
Right.
Right. Which is good and important.
You got to discipline your message.
You got to discipline your message, especially when you're only getting 2 hours to do it, because my class is only 2 hours.
Right.
But I'm giving them a packet that they have 4 weeks worth of work to do, to write down how you feel after that McDonald's or that Burger King. See how you feel. Write down after you eat that piece of grilled salmon and that beautiful salad. Mm-hmm. How do you feel afterwards? Right? Start eating the rainbow. You know, interject some fermented foods into your diet. See how that reflects yourself over a week. Mm-hmm. Right? Let them understand what drinking kombucha and having kimchi, and I eat what they call cordita. Cordita is a El Salvadorian version of sauerkraut.
Okay.
Sauerkraut has or kimchi. They too have, you know, two great fermented foods that I keep regularly in my diet.
Right.
But they take over, right? You can put kimchi on everything. That's what you taste. You put sauerkraut on anything, that's what you taste. Cordita has a little bit more of that Latino subtleness to it, but a little spice, so you can put it on fucking everything.
Cool.
Right? So it's great. And it's, again, it's a lacto-fermented relish, if you will, made with cabbage, because everybody makes things with cabbage, you know? And so that's the things that I do. I do lacto-fermented applesauce with all the great apples we have around here.
Yeah.
Spoonful of it here and there. As I say, my aunt has become a guru with this. She cooks the way we did 100 years ago. Mm. And her and I have paired up, and she's helping me build this program. And it's pretty great stuff. And
what's it called again?
Well, she's called Happy Belly Kitchen.
Right. But what's yours?
But my program is actually calling Feeding the Fire.
Okay.
Mind, body, and brain fuel for the next generation.
Do you have a website with all this on it?
I'm building this shit, man. Yeah, yeah. This is all just happening. Yeah, this is all just happening.
Good. And you got to tell me when it's up so I can push
people. I am pushing to try to get this marketed. I'm trying to get this into the ideas for schools, you know, because, you know.
It's going to be tough, man, because it's hard to. Teaching nutrition in schools is hard because the cafeteria doesn't serve this shit. So
well, the idea and
it's
the
tricky.
It's the idea, but this is the idea: is if I can go out and plant the seed to the kid, you know, that's how I became a chef. I became a chef because my grandmother was a fantastic cook.
Right.
She used to spend. It used to be. It was great because it was days before the preparation. There was company coming over. There was this excitement about having this beautiful event and this dinner party. This multitudes of personalities were coming through the door. The appetizers were flowing. Everybody was feeling good. We had this beautiful property overlooking. Blah blah blah. It was all nice. Until everybody got lost in the sauce, and then the ugly part of it came around. But the beginning part of it was so beautiful. And then when growing up with my mother, because my mother was an alcoholic for 19 years of my life, the first 19, of course, she has been since now, she's 30 something years sober, and God bless her to be able to do her. That's been a big message to me. But she was an awful cook. You know, I was the starfish thing, and it was I would be like looking at this, and I would be looking at it, and I would be thinking, wow, Nanny used to make this great food, and this is what I'm getting. And at a young age, all of a sudden, I just kind of would watch what my grandmother would do. I was the youngest bartender, by the way. You know, that's how, you know, I was here, take the last sip of the beer, and can you make me a vodka grapefruit?
Right.
Yeah, sure can. Gin and tonic, I was great at that stuff. Yeah. And making, you know, taking the little sips, did I get it right?
Did I get it right?
9, 10 years of age, it wasn't appropriate, right?
Right.
You know, but it was, you know, I had to find a way to break that cycle. You know, I blame even though my father died of a heart attack when I was in fifth grade, I carried that into my 20s. Had nothing to do with it. Mm. But for some reason, I felt blamed for it.
Right.
Because of my self-worth issues, because of my issues that I had, and I numbed myself because of it. I got, you know, my mother actually, strangely enough, a little side story, my mother got sober essentially because of me, because I stole my stepfather's bottle of vodka.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Yeah.
And my father automatically assumed she did it. So he stepped in and got a little intense with her and checked her into a rehab. She never realized it because she was drinking. She was like, oh, fuck.
Did I?
Yeah. Did I? and it was just, it was an awful thing because I ended up, you know, alcohol poisoning. I was laying in I woke up in a fucking pricker bush.
Oof.
It was awful. And I was, you know, freshman in high school, so it was like my real first crazy drunk, right?
Right.
You know, my my friend's pop-up camper was never the same after that.
I bet, yeah.
So.
Do you, all right, we got to wrap up.
Yes, sir.
But you got to come back, please.
Absolutely.
Because I'm only like a third of the way through with you.
Okay, okay.
All right, so the first thing is mental health for children.
It's called Healthy Minds for
Healthy
Children.
Healthy Minds for
Children. We're an advocacy group out of Dutchess County. And
how do we reach you?
You could probably, best stuff would probably be, well, Terry is old school. She's been doing this 17 years. She's in her late 70s. The only reason why she's still doing this is because I think she's passing the torch to me.
Okay.
Yeah, as far as to become the advocate on this.
Right.
But she's, I guess would be best to Facebook me and my messengers through Michael Diederich. Just DL me in that.
Spell Diederich for people.
DEDERICK.
Cool.
And you'll know you're on the right page because I donate. My whole page is a testimony to a father's love for his son.
Mm.
So I become a digital footprint for my grandkids that are just 8 years of age right now and don't have a clue. They're starting to understand that they have an angel daddy, but at some point in their life, they will be there, and I have to play long ball for that, but hopefully I will be spiritually fit. And when they look me up, they'll be like, wow. This is what happens. So, so there's that. I do advocacy. I'm on the board of I'm on the advisory board for Hope Rocks.
Okay.
I am the chef at Storm King Lounge and Fair, local in Cornwall.
Okay.
Now I am involved.
Do you guys have live music there?
We do. We actually have music this Friday, which is great.
Do you know who's playing?
Hurley Mountain Band.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. He's a great. He's a good guy. He's a local guy from Cornwall.
That's Angelo plays with them now, right?
I believe so. Yeah. And we just got a grant because it's the old Storm King Theater that was built in the early 1900s.
Right.
And we just got a grant to be able to redo the theater. So, you know, in a couple years from now, this place is going to be a marquee place. It's got a beautiful marquee of the old Storm King neon
lights.
And that's such beautiful. So it's always going to get bigger. We're going to plan on doing this past event on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And just by the original turnout, it looks like it's only going to get bigger.
Right.
So,
wonderful.
Yeah. So those are the groups, you know, and I also have been involved with another group down in Westchester called the Just in Time Movement. That's another movement. Again, all these people have lost it. They're all became part of this because of they've been touched by this in some way or another.
Yeah.
Whether it's an overdose, whether it's a suicide, or whether it's a struggling of mental health in some capacity or another. And we need to do better on how we're going to go forward on this. And I'm so happy to be able to have done this multiple times. And now it seems like it's, you know, I don't want to say catching fire because we have too many fires going on right now, but the idea that it is starting to, you know, get some legs and starting to create this nature on its own.
Yep.
Because we all know that we need it.
Yeah, man.
And, you know, Bobby said something about healing the divide.
Yep.
I love the coin phrase, just in whatever that means. It just seems like it's right.
Yep.
You know, and I hope that we can find a way to, you know, move forward together. I do think that there's a book that's coming out, or I don't know if it's back, but I like the name of it called Humanity Strikes Back.
That sounds good.
So I like to see that all this narcissism and all the other stuff is going to exhaust itself because we're going to be able to see for it, and we're going to change the world and make that more empathetic and compassionate, and call what I've been tagging the line of altruism,
mm-hmm.
the selfless act of helping someone else, and what they call radical optimism.
Mm-hmm.
It's another deep there, and I'll have people Google that definition. And those are the two words I love to see that are the nucleus of making this beautiful renaissance that I'd love to see come forward.
Beautiful, man. Thank you for doing the work. I meant what I said. The people, the most powerful voice is people who have been there.
And
you've been there, so thank you for doing the work.
And thank you for giving me the time. I look forward to seeing you guys again.
Yes.
You know, and being involved. Yes.
Beautiful, man. Thank you.
Absolutely, man.
All
thank
right.
you very much.
Thank you.
Peace.
Good?
Good stuff.
Yeah? Good.